Portfolio Committee on Environmental Affairs for the 5th Democratic Parliament of the Republic of South Africa. We are very, very new. Now, as everything that is new is normally referred to, I don't know, there's a wonderful English terminology for it. What do they say, a new broom? That's what they normally say. We hope to do exactly that. I'm Jackson Mthembu. I'm the chair, the new chair of this committee. I'm the one who has just welcomed you on behalf of the entire collective of honorable members. May we then, oh, I also have my secretary here, who will be getting in touch with all of you. But I think you should know her by now. She seems to be part of the old furniture of this parliament. So you should be communicating with all of you, whatever it is that we need from you. But even if we need to visit you, because we will have to visit you so that we get to see whether what is on paper is in fact existing. You know, there are some things that are not on paper. When you do local inspections, you find that in fact there is nothing of the sort. So we will visit you. Members, can we just introduce ourselves for the benefit of the department and the entities?
Moloeni, good morning everybody. My name is Terry Sander, Democratic Alliance from the Eastern Cape.
Good morning, my name is Jamie Sengham, also Democratic Alliance, and I'm from Norway.
From the Democratic Alliance.
Thank you, sir. I'm Johanna Mulemaluleke from Northwest.
The last time I met you were from the ALC. Yeah. And unless you have changed, you know, things do happen.
I won't change, sir.
Morning, everyone. My name is Trevor Bonham. I'm on this committee and I'm from KZN and a member of the African National Congress.
My name is Bantu Olomisa, the president of the UGM.
I represent all 9 provinces.
Maria Kishelembe from the National Freedom Party and the KZN.
Andile Mbisama, Economic Freedom Fighters.
I'm Helen B. Kuseke Kana from Northwest ANC Party.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Patrick. My surname is Mabilo. I'm from the Northern Cape, representing African National Congress.
Before we even start, there is one member who's not here, and he has not been here for some time because he's in hospital. This honorable member, Cyrus Makubela, he's the whip of this this portfolio committee. We wish him well, and we will make the time to go and visit him. In fact, I'm told that he was also sworn in hospital. So we must make time with the portfolio committee just to go and see how he's doing. That completes the entire membership of this committee. We are 11. So 10 members. Oh, I mean, I'm not very good at counting, but we are more than... No, NFC is here. So we're 10. That's one. This is gentleman of the yes, yeah. Yeah. Yep. Then myself was included. So thank you very much. These are the honorable members. As I said to the DG, the last time we interacted last week, then we got to know what the department does, because we didn't want to come to this engagement platform. We didn't want to come into this from a basis of no knowledge. We wanted to come here with some little sense of what is expected from the department, so we have been briefed, but also we have relied on our own research institution in Parliament to also give us some additional briefing. We have said to the DG, and we want to repeat that, we are a committee that is expected to hold you accountable, and we will do so, but we will also do so with respect, hoping that you will also give us the respect that we deserve, because we, besides being honorable members, we are also South Africans who deserve to be respected. We will respect you, but in turn, we expect you to respect us, and of course, we expect you, again, because we are expected by the Constitution to hold you accountable, to respond to whatever areas of concern we might have, and to give us whatever information that we might need from you. And we will do all the asking and the requests with the humility that is expected of us as members of Parliament. But rest assured, where you don't give us the necessary information and whatever, where you don't also try and assist us to mitigate whatever concerns that you might have, we will act a little bit tougher with you. And that's what the Constitution expects from us. DG, we are in your capable hands now.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, for the warm welcome, and Honorable Members, good morning. And I'm here leading a team, and I want to introduce the executive, the CEOs and the members of the executive from each of the entities first, and then come back to the departments, DDGs, and the representatives of the other DDGs. The two that are in front here were not here last week, and I apologize for them, but they will introduce themselves. So can you start there with you, Dr. McCullum, where the first then? And
the
only okay. So you have to just introduce yourself
and
the organization, thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much, DG. Good morning, honorable members. I am Linda Makuleni, the CEO of South African Labour Service. And with me, I've got the executive team, and I would like them to introduce themselves. We also have a board member with us, Mr. Nick Nelson, who is also a member of the audit committee. So I'll give over to the executive to introduce themselves.
Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Committee, my name is Marilise Wilkenderen, CFO of SOS.
Honorable Chairperson and honorable members, my name is Lindani Kwemba, the GM Human Capital Management.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Nikhil Indabani, General Manager of Operations. Thank you.
Good morning, honorable members. I'm Deanda Majorini. I'm GM Corporate Affairs.
I didn't see Deanda now. I'm not sure whether the members saw Deanda. Oh!
Good morning, Honorable Chair and members. My name is Carl Mbizo from the South African National Biodiversity Institute. I'm the acting CEO, and I'll allow members of our delegation to introduce themselves. Thank you.
Good morning, Honorable Committee. My name is Lorato Sitola, and I'm the CEO of Sambi.
Thank you, Justin. From this side, we can see you here. Thank you. Yes.
Good morning, Honorable Committee. My name is Lilian Malino. I'm the Director of Human Capital Development.
Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, I'm Christopher Willis from the South African National Biodiversity Institute, Sandy. I'm the Chief Director of Conservation, Gardens and Tourism.
son, Sister Manelli, so.
Good morning, honorable members, honorable chair, Andrew Zalumas from Sister Mangalisa. Thank you.
So that we are able to capture what you say, there is something that a kidnobby can drag there so that we hear you. There you are.
Thank you, Sergeant. I'll stand up and die again. That's Andrew Zerunas, Issy Mangalisa, the miracle, miraculous, CEO, and very nice to meet you, portfolio committee, and the words of the chairman will be taken to heart. Thank you.
Thank you.
Andrew, you're alone,
yeah? Okay, and yeah. Honourable Chair and Committee, my name is A. Sevilla from St. Park. I'm the acting Chief Executive currently.
Good morning, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. My name is Ed Fury. I'm the acting CFO, St. Park.
From the entities, the ministry is represented here in the deputy ministry. So see, then we come to the department.
Good morning, Chair and members. I'm Errol Makova, parliamentary officer for the minister.
Good morning, Chair. My name is Eli Masin. I'm a parliamentary officer for the deputy minister's office.
We did not hear you, just use your short word for us.
My name is Harry Masina. I'm a member of the Office of the Deputy Minister.
Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Members. My name is Osipon Maban. I'm the Director General of the Department of Health and Medical Affairs. And next to me is Dimpo Makotoko. She is the Chief Director responsible for business performance, and I hand over to you.
Good morning, Honourable Members, Honourable Chair. My name is Alf Wills. I'm DDG for Environmental Advisory Services.
Good morning, Chair, Honourable Members. My name is Fundisile Mkepeni. I'm Deputy DG for Biodiversity and Conservation.
Good morning, Chair Members. My name is Esther Macau. I'm the Chief Financial Officer of the Department.
Good morning, Honourable Chair and Members. I'm Veronica Stein, the Chief Director of Budget and Financial Management.
Good morning, Honourable Chair and Members. My name is Hisham Abare. I'm a DD with the Department.
Legal.
You don't know what to do.
Yeah, I introduced myself last, and most of the members, but I'll repeat: legal, authorizations, compliance, and enforcement.
Thank you.
Good morning, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. My name is Mark Gordon. I'm the DDG for Chemicals and Waste Management.
Good morning, Honourable Members and Honourable Chair. I'm Sibongi Sensano. I'm the Director in the Office of DG.
Good morning, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. I'm Julie Zuri. I'm the Chief Director of Air Quality Management and International Air Quality Officer.
Good morning, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. My name is Shoni Zani, MJP. I'm sitting here representing the Deputy Director General for Climate Change and Air Quality Management. But I'm the Chief Director for Climate Change Adaptation.
Good morning, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. I'm Mike Makwarela. I'm the Director responsible for Climate Change Mitigation.
Good morning, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. Guy Preston, I'm the DDG for Environmental Programs.
Good morning, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members.
Alan Boyd, I'm a Director of Biodiversity and Coastal Research in the branch Oceans and Coasts, and I'm acting for the Chief Director, Mr. Ashley Naidu, who is the Chief Director of Research in Oceans and Coasts.
Good morning, Honourable. Honourable Members, I'm Jonathan Belletia. I'm currently sitting as the Acting Deputy Director for Dr. Mandemakiso and Ange Mapudre, and I'm the Chief Director for Ocean Conservation.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Kaulam Kese. I'm the Director responsible for Coastal Biodiversity. Thank you very much.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and members. My name is Yazid Peterson. I'm the Director of Coastal Pollution Management within the department, but currently also representing the Chief Director for Integrated Coastal Management. Thank you.
Good morning, Honorable Members. I'm Hans Schumann, the Chief Director for Governance in the department.
Good morning, Honorable Chair. Honourable Members, my name is Kim Manda. I'm the Director in the Chief Director of Governance. Okay.
Good morning, Honourable Chair and the Members. My name is Kim Alfie Tawani. I'm the Chief Director of Environment Sector Coordination. Today I'm Richard Martin, the Chief Operating Officer. Thank you.
DJ, I'll ask before you take the podium. Thank you very much for the introduction. Precisely because we have one day, we will interact with the department and the entities simultaneously. We will not have some other time for the budget purposes where we will call the entities. We don't have that luxury. But of course, we want to know what the entities are going to do, so we'll have ample time. After we have passed the budget, we told the department last week that we have until the 31st of July to pass the budget, because our constitution is very clear that when the budget statement or when the budget is given to the House of Parliament, from that time until it is passed, we have 4 months. Now, as we all know, this budget statement has been sitting with the House of Parliament. At the end of July, it will be 4 months, and we have no intention of going against our constitution. So that's why all parliament, all portfolio committees, all of us are busy at work to ensure that we pass the budget. Within these constraints, all of us know that we have had an election year. So we have got those constraints. That's why we only have one day as this portfolio committee to interact with you. Tomorrow it's other portfolio committees that are sitting, and some of the members who are here belong to those portfolio committees. So we cannot then have 2 days with you. Day after tomorrow, again, other portfolio committees that are sitting for the purpose, the very same purpose. So we therefore beg your indulgence that we work together to ensure that come the 31st, all of us are ready to pass the budget. For our purpose, DG, as you know, we will be interacting with you today because we have got one day. Now, the last time I checked, a day ends at what time? At 12. So a day ends at 12. Midnight. So if we are unable to do our business before 12 o'clock midnight, we still have time until 12 o'clock midnight. So please bear with us. We have this constitutional duty to perform, all of us. We will not disappoint the people of our country by failing to pass a budget. We can't do it. That's the first issue. After we have interacted with you, obviously members will then have to interact with the outcome of our interaction with you. We only have, again, one day to meet as members. That's next Tuesday. So myself and my colleagues in the parliament will have to make sure that after the deliberations with members today, we are able to produce a report that goes to Parliament, and members will then interact with that report on Tuesday. And agree then we report then to Parliament, because the last day we have to report to Parliament is the 11th of July. After the 11th of July, from the 15th of July, DG and your delegation, we start with the debates from the 15th up to the end of July, up to the 31st of July. Our debate time, ours, Department of Environmental Affairs, is on the 17th. Now, it doesn't matter whether you are late or not, please be available to you on the 17th. On the 17th, all of us need to make ourselves available, because that's where we will be going through the formalities of debating the budget and the strategic plans and the annual performance plans of the Department of Environmental Affairs on the 17th. So these are very, very important dates that are cast in stone. We can't change them if we are to meet the objective of passing the budget by the 31st of July. We can't change those dates. Now, we are in your capable hands. We had agreed the last time we met here at DG that those programs, out of the 7 programs, those programs that also include entities in their mix, they will make their presentation, and after their own, within that presentation, will also get a sense of the presentation of the entity. Within that presentation, of course, as members, when we interact with that program, we'll interact with the program vis-a-vis the department and also vis-a-vis the entity that reports to the department. Just for ways of doing things today, we will, after we have handed over to the DG, who will not be disturbed, will only disturb her and her team when she's done with whatever program. Program 1 will give you the attitude to, if you want to go on Program 1 until 12 o'clock midnight, of course we will not allow that, because you see, by 12 o'clock we must have gone through all 7 programs of the department. That's the only limitation. By 12 o'clock tonight, if we are going to go until 12 o'clock, we must have gone through all these programs of the department and have a sense of whether we have enough financial resource, human resource, and even plans to use those resources in all the 7 programs. We will deal with 1 program, and after we are done with 1 program, we will then allow members to interact with that program, ask questions, ask tough questions, and relative to the matter before us. And when we are done with interacting with the program, we will then proceed to the next program. Are we together, colleagues and members? General?
Sir President, thank you. Fortunately, we were briefed last week. I hope that the team is going to make presentation. We'll talk to each slide, not necessarily read the slide verbatim. You will know the subject. Please, otherwise, you will talk until midnight and beyond, and then by the time we're supposed to ask questions, we would have not followed anything. Please.
I think that's also very assisting, colleagues, and these are pertinent issues. What are these pertinent issues that we need to deal with for the purpose of passing budgets? For the purpose of passing that segment of the budget in that program or in the sub-program. And again, thank you very much. That's very helpful, General. You forgive me. He called me all sorts of names, but now he must just call me Tay. I call him General. Thank you very much, General. DG, we are in your capabilities.
Thank you very much, Chair, for that guidance. Honorable members, I'm not going to talk too long. The program managers will talk. Firstly, just to officially take the apology for the Chief Operating Officer
with my court. She is on official duties abroad and DDG Climate Change and Air Policy Management, Ms. Judy Beaumont. They were here last week. And DDG Dr. Mariki, so for Oceans, was not here last week. He's female back he is abroad now. He was on leave, now he's abroad. So those are the official apologies that I wanted to make. Firstly, the document, I will be talking to just in summary, and then allow the presentation as per the document that has been circulated with all the presentations, and each DDG or a representative of that DDG will quickly run through each program or the elements that relate to the activities as well as the budget for that. After I've spoken, I will hand over to Ms. Makotoko and thereafter the Chief Financial Officer before we go to the other program managers. The Chief Financial Officer just falls under Program 1, but also she's going to talk about the resources for all the programs so that each DDG and the CEO, the entity, when they then interact in that regard, you are already aware what are the provisions that are made in that respect. Last week we spoke to the key aspects in terms of the legal and constitutional mandate of the Department of Environmental Affairs, so I will not just repeat that. In the document or the strategic plan that has been tabled, that is covered fully for honourable members. I think it's page 30. You will be able to see all of that up to page 19, and it does cover also the programs. So we spoke to the legal and constitutional mandate for environmental functions. We also spoke to the structure of the department, which is on page 23 of the strategy plan, and then pages 20 to 21 talk to the vision and mission of the department, as well as the values and behaviors that are expected of us to deliver on the strategy. So I'll quickly just state that our vision is, okay, the programs is, they are reflected on the economic classification in terms of the treasury document, the red book. Those are the documents, those are the programs. The red book also has been circulated. I think we are both 50 on page 200, what's the page number? On a red book, just to state the page. I don't know. But, you've been given the book separately. Okay, the book here has been given separately. But the TIC document is also available for members to the perus, but we've just only taken the extract of book 30.
Do all of the members have the presentation? This is the presentation that will be done. That's one. But there is also a strategic plan that was tabled. We have that. Then we also have the estimate of national expenditure 2014.
Where is this red book?
The red book you must wear.
Why are you promoting the EFF color?
Now you are out of order, generally. Out of order. In fact, not even red, it's brown. So, these are the books that we need to have. Do you have all this? If you don't have, we'll get somebody to give you. These estimates, don't worry, it's here. If you have this one, you have this one. Hello, ma? Yours is black and white. Okay, it's not red. Okay. Okay, let's hope you are not all out of fire red lines. Okay. Yeah.
Okay, thanks, and thank you, Chair. The stretch plan, I think the copy that was circulated is one that had errors and typos and some. That was cleaned up, and the final strategic plan is free of those errors.
So I'm hoping that honourable members did not get that old version. If that's what you received, I'm apologising upfront on those minor typos and spelling errors. All right, honourable members, I think I'm going to have the programs. As I said, program one is the administration, so the bridge will not repeat. But that does cover most of our corporate services and governance oversight functions. Our part of our international relations program now is under program 6. And that's the change that has been introduced. Then program 2 is all the legal work. The EIAs, or what we call licensing, environmental authorizations, and also the enforcement and compliance. All of the functions and activities are funded under that program too. Program 3 is all the functions that relate to the coast and the ocean activities. Also, there are aspects of monitoring the functions, the research functions, and the exploration management at sea that is covered under that program. The vessels and the financing, the big item when you look at the budget when the CFO presents, there is a big item there that is a figure that goes to financing the vessel, SAR Dallas, and the other research vessels. Then program 4 is climate change and air quality management. Again, all the work on air quality management, climate change, host mitigation, adaptation, and monitoring and evaluation are covered today in that program 4. Program 5 is still under program 4, the weather services, South African weather services, is covered under the program 4. So our transfers that we make to South African weather services is in the budget that we allocate. But then they can, when they present, they will also talk about the aspects or that relates to revenue, which is then what they generate, not what we give them from the future. Then on biodiversity and conservation, here we have all the work on biodiversity and heritage and matters. The three entities, that's South African National Park, the South African Biodiversity Institute and Isimangaliso are receiving transfers under that program. So when we discuss program 5, then those are the entities that will also be discussing. And then environmental programs in respect of alien invasive control and also the implementation of the expanded public works program, green economy work, sustainable development work, and work on international relations is under program 6. Chemicals and waste, this is a program that covers most of the activities that we undertake in terms of our plans on waste and also on the chemicals, like we recently ratified, or it was recently signed, and Parliament must ratify the Minamata Convention, which is a regulatory convention, and others, which is the Basel Convention, and others that deal with trans movement of chemicals in our country and other multilateral agreements in the area of chemicals are covered, and all our activities are covered under that program 7. Then on vision, we have a vision of a prosperous and equitable society that lives in harmony with natural resources, and we have a mission that then we say will attain the vision by providing leadership in environmental management, conservation and protection towards sustainability for the benefit of South Africans and the global community. So we're giving effect to the constitutional mandate that the department has through that mission statement. And I'm going to now hand over to Dimbo to talk to the strategy map and then get to the further details on Program 1. Thank you.
Thank you, CJ. PN. Thank you, members. I'm going to quickly talk to the strategy map, which I'm sure the details of will be covered by each of the programs when they talk to that. In the strategy map, it's basically one pager that talks to our objectives as a whole, as a department, and it talks basically in terms of our values, where we say we are a performance-driven organization, and underpinning that is ensuring that we have adequate and appropriate skills, we have a corporate governance system, and have the information base to be able to deliver services on, but also ensure that the environment within which we operate is secure, is conducive, but also transformed. In doing our work, we are the main focus on ensuring that we improve the integrity of the environment, and this we achieve through compliance with environmental legislation, international engagement that we have, corporate governance mechanism, and also improving sector education and awareness. We also understand that it is important for all the stakeholders to have access to the information that we have, for them to then assist us and take the onus of the responsibility in managing the environment. As a knowledge-based organization, it's also important that we have effective knowledge and information management systems, and that we strengthen our science programs in all areas, actually, to ensure a science policy interface, so that we, when we pass in policies or the legislation, there is enough evidence, scientific evidence, to allow that to happen. We do have a focus now on climate change, on both managing the impacts and also mitigating the climate change impacts. Okay? It is important that we are aligned with government priorities, and in this case, it's around ensuring that we contribute to socio-economic development, so that we need to ensure that the environmental sector does provide those benefits for our citizens. When we have done all our work, we are hoping to have states where our biodiversity will be conserved and protected, our ocean and coastal environment also protected and conserved. We want to have less waste that is better managed, cleaner and healthier air for our citizens to align with Section 24 of the Constitution, but also we want to enhance environmental contribution towards regional sustainable development. So in a nutshell, that is Department of Environmental Affairs and what we want to achieve. I will then quickly move on to Program 1 specifically. Okay. In terms of Program 1, as a audit, we will not, I won't go through the slides verbatim. I'm just going to highlight some of the factors that we have there. DG indicated that we're looking at administration within the department in this regard, and we focus on human capital management, and our aim in this regard is to always ensure that our vacancy rate is never above 10%, and that people do contract and we manage performance, because as I indicated earlier on, one of our values is a highly performance-driven organization, so we can ensure that. But it's also important to develop our human capital, and in that regard, we do offer salaries, and we ensure that we have a work-based skills plan, which gets implemented in the department. And to also contribute to employment creation, we do employ interns in the department. We can get 100 of those per year. I think this is an area that is also influenced by the budget that we have available. We can really accommodate such number of people. DG, last week we spoke briefly around the green building that has been awarded to the 6-star rating. So in terms of ensuring that we have a secure, harmonious and conducive working environment, we will ensure that when we move into that building, we try and maintain that standard, that rating in terms of our operations as well. So that's the focus area that we're looking at there. But transformation is also important to us as a department. As such, we are looking at complying to employment equity standards that have been set in the country. The state security conducts security assessments every 2 years, and our role is to ensure that if there are any recommendations that come out of that, we implement that to ensure that we have a secure environment. I also spoke briefly about the information technology system that we have in the department, that we need to ensure that we have a base that we can operate on. We have what we call the master systems plan, which basically looks at what the needs of each of the programs are, the IT needs of each of the programs are, and we ensure that we then have solutions that enable them to do their business more efficiently and effectively. And we must also ensure that our IT services are always available, both for internal use and also for external use, should people require.
require information. As such, we do then understand that it is important for us to provide information for both the internal and external stakeholders that we have, and this we achieve through issuing media statements, participating in public coordinating public participation events, so we encourage stakeholders to also engage with the department, because we do understand and believe that we will have more success if we ensure that the citizens of this country also understand their role and their responsibilities in protection of the environment. Therefore, we also are focused on sector education and awareness. And in this regard, we have also gone to schools and looked at teacher training and also having environmental awareness campaigns. We also do contribute to the sector skills plans, and we work with CETAs in this regard. But we also are training, there was an education aid last week that in terms of our environmental management inspectors and monitors, we ensure that we train them, and this could be prosecutors as well, or people that are in the justice sector, to ensure that they have an understanding and an appreciation of environmental issues so that they can assist us to protect the environment better. We also have a focus on local government support system, and in that regard, we coordinate the input of the sector through our campaign. We did reflect last week that there are now 14 outcomes that we are working on as government, and we are responsible for outcome 10. So the coordination of the work that happens in outcome 10 is done in this program as well. Also, still on local government support, we last financial year we finalized a local government support strategy. And in this financial year, we are then starting rolling out the implementation of that strategy. So we have developed an annual plan for that, which we hope to implement in its entirety by the end of the financial year. We also reflected that we do work on sector conflict management, and the government mechanisms and appointment of a panel of mediators have been finalized and are still being finalized in this year. And we are still going to look at how many cases we will receive. We expect a number of folks to prevent resolution of those, but I need to sensitize members to the fact that this part might change because we are busy with the admin analysis and understanding the number of cases that we have out there, and we'll amend our plans accordingly once that work has been rolled out. We also have a responsibility around governance, sound corporate governance in the department, and this talks to our tabling issues, our engagement with the parliamentary office, and in this regard, we still commit to finalizing all the parliamentary questions that we receive within time frames, but also ensure that we table our questions. These are all compliance issues, so we have just captured it under compliance with tabling requirements and fiscals. So the strategy, the annual report and the likes, that we show that we turn over within time frame. Also, we would wish to maintain the status of getting an unqualified audit report, both for the department and the entities, but also ensure that our coordination with the cabinet and trustees happen within time frame, so that we enable the oversight role that must be played. Our expenditure, we have managed to keep our expenditure at 98%, and we wish to maintain that, but also to then contribute to transformation, economic transformation, and this we hope to achieve through affirmative procurement, in which we want to ensure that at least 65% of our procurement budget is on BEE organizations. The other stuff that is covered under Program 1, if you have realized, members, when DG went through the program structures, we talked about issues around international engagement, which she indicated are now under Environmental Advisory Services. So when we put input from Environmental Advisory Services, those issues will be covered there. So I didn't necessarily just skip through them.
Thanks, Honourable Chair, and thank you, Member. And my presentation is I'm just going to outline it quickly. First, I'm representing the coming 3 years. That is 2014, 2015, and 2016. Then I'm going to present the expenditure for a year that we ended 31st of March this year, 2014. And then a little bit of what we've expended, for 2 months, April and May. So it's a very simple presentation. I've given the baseline for the year 2014 so that you just see how much was allocated to us last year. In total, it was 5.2 billion. And we can see that most of our budget is sitting under environmental programs.
Sorry, I may be a bit slow, but I'm trying to pick up where you are right now.
MTS.
That's what I remember. Are we all in that section? MTS.
Thank you.
I need to come with Andy. General. General, let's just deal with the work at hand. Okay.
Okay.
Generals and commissars and I think we're together now. We have the documents.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
And just recap a bit. I'm going to be presenting three scenarios. The MTF 2014-15, 15-16, 16-17. And on the left, I've given the baseline of what was allocated in 2013-14. That 2013-14 is the financial year that ended on the 31st of March this year. Okay. And then I'm going to be presenting then how much did you spend for 2013-14? How much did you have to spend? Then, how much was spending just for the last 2 months? Okay.
I appreciate that let us know where we are. So we'll give us a lot of way. Thank you.
So the baseline of the year that ended the 31st of March 2014, we had a budget of 5.2 billion. And I'm going to give you a list of how much we spent it. Okay, for the MTF, you can see from 5.2 we grew to 5.668 billion, then 5.98 billion, and 6.599 billion. And I said there, if we look at the big figures, you can see expanded public works projects. It's having a little two. So most of our budget is allocated to our expanded public works projects. You can see 2.2 billion there, 2.2 billion, 2.1 billion, and then 2.5 billion in 2016 and 17. The other big expenditure is departmental agencies. You can see a little one there. 1.1 billion, 1.197 billion, 1.3 billion, and then 1.4 billion in the outer years. And then, otherwise, the other big budget is our compensation of employees on top, 668 million, 752 million, 808 million, 866 million, and total of the budget. But I'll be talking to that as the slide goes. One DG, the green fund allocations, I think it also tiers the 250 million, 250 million, 300, and then 350 million. And that we do in conjunction with DBSA. Okay, next slide. That little one that was actually pointed initially, these are transferred to a public entity. We transfer in two types: financial assistance for the operations, and then infrastructure grants. We transfer to Isimanga Resource Center, South African National Biodiversity Institute, and then South African Weather Services. Then infrastructure grants follows the same pattern. And if you can look at the bottom, it's 1.1 billion as the previous slide, almost 1.2 billion, 1.3 billion, and then 1.4 billion. Okay, next slide. And there we just analyze which projects are we transferring for to the public entities. We've got environmental protection and infrastructure projects. And right at the bottom there, I put a star just for the members to note which projects are those: working for waste, working for land, working for the coast, and then also training and greening open spaces on that note. And then also on right at the bottom, you see there's always incentives, and then working on fire, you can see there's projects and then incentives, and then working for water, there's projects and incentives. Those incentives are not, you know, like state and allocations to the department. Once you've actually, you know, like achieved a certain performance level or overachieved it, the treasury does give us additional money, you know, based on our motivation and our achievements to be able to extend those. So they are not just, you know, like in this allocation, but they are available. And then there, I'm trying to say then what are these HW projects again, and the infrastructure grants mainly go to, you know, all the public entities, sandbags, we also have small contractors for clearing alien invasive species, and then there's our DBSA transfers, all those infrastructure, and then right at the bottom, you can be able to see that we've got operations and compensation. That is just the analysis of our environmental sector projects or our expanded public projects, analyzing the 3 billion, the 3.5 billion, and the 3.7 billion, and the 4.2 billion. As I said initially, out of the 5 billion, 6 billion, or whatever that we have in the department, almost half of it goes to infrastructure grants and public entities. Next slide. We also do some little transfers to some of the non-profit organizations, national regulator for compulsory specification. That is the regulator for our plastic microfilm, to say how is our plastic supposed to measure, because that those are contributing to the weight, you know, like sector in South Africa. And contribute to the National Association for Clean Air, not much, and then Conservation Board in KwaZulu-Natal, and then some contribution to the African World Heritage Fund. Not a lot of
to add, members, on the plastic bags, when the regulations for plastic bags were passed, we were moving from a thickness where plastic were not recyclable. And therefore, there was then an agreement that for industry to then meet the target of recycling the plastics, we would have to move from where we were by a certain number of microns in terms of thickness of plastic to where it is appropriate for a plastic to be recyclable. But that's basically the work that they do. That's what we fund through the NRCF in order to comply with the thickness requirements for recycling. Thank you.
What about the imported plastics from China?
But they should meet the standards. So I don't know. I cannot answer that now, Honourable Member. I think we can check.
Do we have plastics from China?
I don't.
We don't know.
I don't know.
Okay, let's first go and find out where they are there. Because the general might be coming up with something that doesn't exist. Okay, madam.
Thank you. Next slide. On goods and services, on our first slide, on second slide, I said I had a little four. So I'm trying to analyze the which are the main cost drivers in the department. The main cost drivers in the department for those within services is office accommodation, 66, 83, 89, and 77 million. The next one is the unitary payment for our new building that we are going to be moving into around about this month, which is July and August, 60 million, 63 million, 66 million, 67 million. And we also contribute internationally for international membership, 18, 6, 6, and then 6. And then with our biggest, you know, like expenditure also goes to our information systems, the CTAS and our website, 33 million, 34 million, 36 and 37. Then we also, you know, like provision for our auditors, internal, external, forensic, 10, 11 and 11. And then we also, you know, for the new projects, the built infrastructure for South Africa, we had requested a budget from National Treasury for strategic infrastructure projects, reviews, strategic environmental assessments, the 7 million, the 2 million, and 29 million. A little bit for research day, 2020, that would belong to Oceans and Coast. And then we also need money for our laboratories, their safety, 10 million and 10 million. And I think we can go to the bigger one, Veronica. Our SAR Gallas is being operated and managed by external, you know, like contractors, 88 million, 96 million, 111 million, very expensive. And we also have our supplies for the Antarctica Islands, for our fuel, groceries, and satellites, 11 million, 12 million, and 13 million. And with our ship, who also needs helicopter services to load on and offload in the Antarctica, 28 million, 32 million, and 34 million. And in our goods and services, remember I said to the public entities like South African Weather Services, Isimangaliso, and Sandy, we transfer. But the small agents, which are clearing agent in the services, we don't transfer funds because they are not, you know, like public entities, they are not being audited by the Auditor General. So we raise on the clear we pay. And then that is 97, 279, 236, and 286. So if we take that and we look at basically our total 6 costs, you can see 499, 731, and 707. What is available to the department then? It's by 429 at the bottom, then 468, 602, and whatever. What I want to, you know, like to highlight today is that our compensation of employee budget is about 800 to 768 per annum. Our yield of goods and services budget is almost half of it. So we have to explore, you know, like to explore efficiencies of seeing how much are we going to spend, you know, less for more. We don't have a lot of budget on goods and services. And those are just notes for saying compensation of employee budget is normally growing between 6 and 6.6%. Our use of goods and services budget has always been such, I think across government as well, 1%, 2%, and 3% every year. So as such, the growth is only 3% for use of goods and services. The budget that has been increasing is for the departmental agencies, mainly infrastructure and the expanded public works projects. And we'd like to bring to the attention of the members that, well, in the case where the use of goods and services growth is only 3%, the department is also watching the inflationary increases, mainly in the vessel operating costs, the helicopter services, the fuel for the Antarctica, you know, like in all the other supplies. And we've grown the establishment a bit, and we need funds for funding that establishment. And generally, all goods and services have increased, so 3% is in fact very much below inflation. Now I'm going to talk to extend issue for the year that ended 31st of March 2014. The department was allocated 5.2 billion as I showed it in the first slide. The department has spent 5.2 billion. The percentage spent is 99.9%. And all what was paid back to National Treasury was only 6.5 million. And that was really on
compensation,
and a little bit of on goods and services. So we basically spend almost all of our budget.
Next slide.
And that is just the graph. The green one is actually what we're projecting, and the red one is how we're tracking it for the past month. And that is almost the same thing that this. That was what was allocated 5.2 billion and what was spent 5.2 billion. Again, in the current year, up to the 31st of July, Honorable Chair, we are also finalizing our audit. The Auditor General is supposed to issue his audit opinion per PFMA by the 31st of July 2014. We are hoping to get it in audit. We are now also in the process of redoing our NPF, starting with next year 2015-16 and adding the other year. Remember, we end on 16-17 and now we're going to start 15-16 and then end up with 17-18. We are also going to be requesting National Treasury for a budget increase this year because we've got a minister in our department and also the deputy minister, and also increased our structure. And we're also moving to the new building between July and August this year. For the current year, these are allocations to public entities. Also, for the year ended 31st March 2014, we allocate operational and then infrastructure grant to public entities. You can see the SANParks, 544 million. SANDI, 264 million. South African Weather Services, 182 million. Isimanga Little Wetlands Park, 125 million. In total, it is the figure that I showed again in the first slide, which was 1.117 million. And then the public entities also collect some of their own revenues that are just took from the annual financial statements. And then in total, their revenue there is 1.2 billion. And then for South African National Biodiversity, 60 million. South African Weather Services, 109 million. Isimangaliso Wetlands, 40 million. And then in total, 1.4 billion. Then we also analyze where does the public entities generate their revenue from, because they also generate their own revenue. From their operation, for their operation activities like outstanding parks, the park revenue, tourism revenue, they also generate their own revenue of about 1.2 billion. And then you can see also family generation, they 36 million, cash, I would say, also visiting, our biodiversity institutes like the parks and the gardens. And then South African Weather Services also generating some revenue on, commercializing their own activities. Also, Isimangaliso is generating their own revenue. Also, visiting the parks, also on tourism. They also generate other revenue perhaps from, investing, and then also from interest. And then ultimately, the total at the bottom of combined revenue, what we transfer to them, including the revenue that they are generating, you can see SANParks, 2.2 billion, SANDI, 576, and then South African Weather Services, 297, and then Isimangaliso, 150, and then in total, then 3 billion. The figures might, if the entities are presenting, change a bit, because I took those from the annual financial statements. And then that is then the total revenue. Next slide. Public entities expenditure. Okay, we've done the total revenue. You can see their expenditure there. If we look at SANParks, the revenue of 2.2 billion. They spend 2.3 billion. And then they've got a deficit of 173 million. I'll talk to that later. And then we can see SANI had revenue of 531 million. Spent 491.2 million, had a surplus of 39.8 million. South African Weather Services, 335 million revenue, 295 expenditure, and a surplus of 14 million. Isimangaliso at 86 million, expenditure 107 million and a deficit of 20 million. And I think this knowledge will be able to. That is just a graphical presentation of it. But I'm going to look at Sand Parks, that 173 million that was spoken about. Sand Parks, in our discussion, embarked on a project of evaluating their low-level staff, about 822 of them. And these low-level staff understand since 1980-something or 1990-something never belonged to any medical pay scheme. Now, some parks have accumulated a liability of about 155 million for post-retirement of those funeralized staff members. The remedial action that same parks is going to take there, because it's not like, you know, like an annual loss, obviously a liability over the years. They are going to be looking at different insurance companies to see how they will not dead in government in paying for those post-medical aid liabilities. So basically, in a nutshell, it's where you say our low-level staff for so many years didn't belong to any medical aid. And now they want to belong to a medical aid and they are approaching retirement. And to address those inequalities and inequities, what is it that you're going to do? Then you check on the licenses. Then the next step is, how are you going to generate money to fund it? The other deficit of IFIMA is an operational deficit, and I think Dr. Zalomi will be able to explain it better than me. Also, it's a non-cash write-off. Okay, next slide. Current year expenditure is only 2 months. We will normally report our expenditure for the month on the 16th of the next month. So expenditure for June is not there because we are reporting it on the 16th of July. So we've got only April and May this year. We have, as I said, the budget for this year is 5.68 billion, like we've seen, you know, like the previous slide. We've only spent 741.6 million, which is actually 13.1%, and funds available 4.9 billion. I think we are in line with the pattern of the expenditure, but a little bit high. According to the projection, we should spend about 8% per month. So if you take 2 months, it's okay. We're supposed to be at 16%. So somewhere we've got 16%, somewhere we've got 19% there. Then the average is 13%. But if you look in between, I have to monitor to say why is biodiversity of 19.1%, so what's going to happen? Why is climate change at 16.5%, and that's how we monitor. We look at the average, but we also monitor in between. Thanks, Nikki. Thank you, Chair.
Just before we then hand over back to the Chair, the slide with the entities, I think we can allow both Mangalis and South African Water Service and Sand Parks to talk to and just add more in that regard. And there was a footnote earlier on that this year also Water Services say 20 million that has been cut from their budget, but also the department overall, they were budget cuts, as the CFO has indicated. Don't have much to add, it's done. Nothing to add. How about it's my little?
Have a thanks, Gigi.
Alright. Okay. Alright then. Yeah. What are the questions?
I think that most of the issues have been covered, but I think the area where there's a challenge is our budget for the next 2 years, the operational budget that has been cut by 40 million rand, and to have an impact in terms of our, the implementation of the strategy. But I think with the department, we are having discussions and trying to engage national treasury as well. Thank you.
Sandy?
Thank you, Chair. There's nothing to add. We've been covered for.
Right, thanks. Thanks, Chair. I think program one then and the budget has been presented, and then we'll wait for the
questions and then go to them.
Can we then look at, since we have been given the entire budget, we can then zoom into any area where we need some answers in relation to the budget. Remember, Lamisa?
The Honorable Minister of this department last year or year before did announce that an amount of 8 billion rand would be transferred to the Green Fund and that it would be managed by the DDSA. The curious question is, I didn't see the breakdown of what DDSA does. First question which I have, do you sit in the panel which allocates the money to the various projects? And if so, are these projects new or are you still funding other institutions which you used to fund before? So that we are not misled yet, because we thought it by now, one would be having other little testing courses in other provinces, but you don't see that. And how do you deal also with institutions which have got a direct access to the global fund and also get money from the departments? And then you go to the disadvantaged community areas and then you don't find any money is invested, especially around biodiversity programs. So, just unpack this DPSA. What is it? Do they just pay or are they involved in analyzing projects? Do they have committed people and you to do that?
Yes, yes, Oruma.
Yes. Two small questions. On page 3, on the third line projects, I see on 2014 a reduction of finance, but every other project has an increase. I just want to know, on 553186, it dropped. I just want to know what happened there. And another one, the laboratories, occupational health and safety. There are 10 million allocated in 2013-14 and 14-15. Does that project done away with? There's no further allocation on the 15-16-17. That's all, Chair.
The Chief, then the time of service.
Thank you, Chair. My question will be to the last presenter. I think on page 9, that will be corrected on top of the public entities revenue of the year ended March 21, 2014. I believe that are going to be corrected because 20114, we do not have such a year. And then on page 4, it might be like a terminology to me, unitary payment, new departmental building. Because I'm not one of the old members in this committee, if maybe I can get clarification that unitary payment of 60 million rand, I don't know, a year, for 3 years, what is happening? I appreciate the explanation on that. Thank you.
Yes, Honourable Member, for example.
Thanks, Chair. I'm interested in Program 3, Oceans and Coaching, and I see that the department does suggest some sort of allocation there, but the big question for me is, we know that there's massive marine resource preservation, and is this department in position to actually monitor that, or should there be a conversation
from a pure resource and capacity point of view, with other departments, I'm thinking something like the Navy in this point of view. Is not that responsibility, then there's the monitoring, not too much intervention by the department to ensure that our marine resources in particular are being taken care of. Perhaps when we do deal with details, we'll have to also raise the question of, do we know as a nation actually what is going on in this area, just the size and the scale of our marine resources?
Yes, madam.
Thank you, Chairperson. Under administration, I just wanted to check, I saw they talked about they want to reach 2% on people with disabilities. Just want to check on which percent are we now, and then what are the plans to contribute on the percentage with people with disabilities. And also, Chair, we appreciate the skills development in terms of internship, but I just want to check how are they communicating on the internships, particularly people with or living in rural areas, how they are getting information in terms of their internships and learnerships. And then I was worried when on the presentation they talked about 2018-2019, they still talk about unqualified, but when she presented, she said their books are still as the auditor general and they hope to get in audit, so I'm covered now. Thank you, sir.
Yes, yes.
Thanks very much, sir. I'm more concerned with the fact, and especially in startup third world services. I mean, this cut, will the department clarify which services will be affected? Because it's really concerning if there's going to be such a cut in the budget. Thank you, Chair.
Yes, Honourable.
Okay. From the presentations that were made this morning, the chief performance management was touched on. I just wanted to find out who within the department is under performance management, whether it is all staff or whether it is just senior staff. Because the goods and services budget has been cut by approximately 2% over the next few years, it's going to put a greater impact on efficiency and productivity of staff. So I see in your plan you've made allocations for consultants, but I want to know how far your internal upskilling and skills development is going to go, and is there enough budget attached to that to ensure that we have internal capacity versus employing outside consultants. I appreciate the focus on IT that has been placed, because in a green economy, paper costs money, and an IT infrastructure will be sustainable over the long term. I wish it would be applied to our own committee as well. Then I had a concern about your misconduct and grievance turnaround time, 90 days for misconduct and 60 days for grievances. And we know that misconduct cases have an impact on budget as well, because it's not only man hours spent on that, but perhaps legal fees, etc. So is there any way of reducing that misconduct down to 60 days and grievances should be resolved within a fortnight? Then with regards to, we know, compliance, monitoring, enforcement, I know that taking, acting decisively, to quote from you guys, on and ensuring the speedy finalization of crimes and environmental transgressions is a core function of our department. And I know that you touched on the fact that you are training prosecutors, magistrates, investigators, etc. But how effective are those things? Are we spending enough money to ensure that we are strict in environmental compliance to reduce the number of transgressors? Because you know, if we act as prosecutors, then the number of transgressions will be reduced. then with your local government support strategy, that is very important. And I just wanted to find out whether you support the local government in terms of municipal dumps. That is an issue that's plaguing our country and affects directly the health of our citizens. And I noticed there was a bit of a cut in the budget when it came to that, but you listed it as a strategy, but then there's a budget cut. I'm a little concerned about that. South African Weather Services, if my colleague has already touched on that, I see that they have a surplus of 40 million rand, if I'm correct. So I wanted to find out how that 14 million reduction, according to you, according to the figures you were given earlier, is actually a 19 million rand reduction. So if you say 14, I'll use your figures. So there's a reduction of 14 million, you're in surplus of 40 million. I just want to know how real that impact is going to be and how it's going to affect your ability to deliver the services. Sandparks, 155 million rand for unforeseen medical aid, liability, thank you. That's very unfortunate. That these people have been employed since 1980 and only now, you know, is the realization come to, you know, that we've, and I mean, this could have been mitigated a long time ago. These people could have been put on medical aid a long time ago, and this could have been prevented. So I just want you to get more information as to how and why that situation has arisen. Regarding the Agalas and the Algoa, those costs, the escalations are incredulous. What is the cost versus benefit of having the, yes, research, absolutely important, we need to man our seas, etc., but if I can concur with, you know, another one of our honourable members on panel chatting about how we can interlink that with the Navy. I mean, is it really fair for this department to have a burden of those costs? And are we getting enough value for that kind of expenditure? Thank you for not sharing.
Thank you. In fact, when we go to send parts again, apart from this unfortunate liability that's reared its ugly head now, as if it could not be foreseen, there's another of rangers appointments. So was that one also not foreseen? And of course, that goes with all the security arrangements we need to deal with in our parks. We know the danger that we are faced with rhino poaching, amongst others. But we then needed one financial year to deal with these two very important issues financially, as if we have no capacity to plan. If we can just, I said we are new. Please advise us and inform us. Thank you very much. Honourable Member Marie.
Thanks, Honourable Chair. I think on a positive note, it is indeed happening to learn that some of our public entities are performing well in terms of their own revenue generation. But the critical point that we need to emphasize is the question of sustainability, so that there's no loyal approach moving forward in paper. So I think that's one comment that I wanted to make. But what I didn't get around the other entities that are experiencing a deficit is there what plans are in place to ensure that they move from a deficit to a surplus. Now, overall, there's been a projection of reduction of budget over the outer years, MTF. Now, what is going to pick up is that around page 5, budget for integrated permitting system reduced on outer years impact discussed with National Treasury. What is the outcome? or is the engagement still going on with National Treasury vis-a-vis the whole notion of ocean economy? How do we reconcile that? The other matter is around the spaces. Budget is, it has been illustrated that the department is spending over 63 million on office accommodation around the provinces. And in the final year, it will be 65 million. I just want to check, are we moving as a department towards green buildings? Are these still green buildings, efficient energy, or so forth? What I got is only the national office that is going to be green when it opens. So I didn't get any other thing around where the offices or are there moves to move around the green buildings as a department. Lastly, what happens to the surplus? Is it reinvested or what happens to the surplus? Because it's one thing to have a surplus and shine the bank. What investment measures are there? Thanks, Honorable Chair.
Okay, then let's allow the department and the entities to respond to these issues that we have raised.
Honourable Chair, Honourable Member Polonisa's question. On the green funds, there was 800 million allocated initially, and you'll see that there's a further amount of 300 million allocated in the outer years. So a total of 1.1 billion rand over the 5-year period. We put out a request for proposal issue. Against the 800 million, we received 10.9 billion rands worth of applications, 573 applications. The process whereby we processed those applications was one of a committee, evaluation committee, to shortlist potential projects which are bankable potential projects. That shortlist then goes to the management committee. Now, the management committee is composed of the DG chair by the DG. Treasury is sitting on that committee, and then various technical experts, including myself, from the department, and one of the senior managers from the bank. So the bank is represented on the management committee, but not in any majority at all. That committee is advised by what we call a government advisory panel. So it set up a multi-sectoral government advisory panel with representation from all implementing departments, so transport, energy, minerals and resources, agriculture, and also DST and ourselves, and in order to provide policy guidance to the MANCOM in their decision making in terms of priorities. We currently have funded 38 projects in total, 22 implementing projects and 16 research and development related projects. In terms of the evaluation process that the management committee uses, is a due diligence. So the bank has put together a team of experts, environmental experts, the sector expert, as well as financial experts to do due diligence on the business plan. That due diligence has been presented to MANCOM again for the second time for decision making. In terms of the next part of your question, which is how to deal with institutions with access to other global facilities. In actual fact, the Global Environment Facility, which is the one which is currently operational in South Africa under the World Bank, is currently uses a methodology of implementing entities. So the implementing entities are either the World Bank itself or the UN Environment Program or the UN Development Program, UNDP or UNEP. And those implementing entities engage with the project proponents on the ground in order to get that. One of the problems that we've had is that those entities don't come to in a coordinated manner through government. So we often get projects which come to the DG because the DG must endorse. Come to the DG with us not being involved in their formulation and so on. The good news is that for the first time, first in the world in a developing country, we have a national implementing entity accredited by the CIF. The DBSA was accredited about a month ago. So we now have our own national implementing entity, and the objective is to use our 1.1 billion rand green fund to begin to leverage investment flows, not only from other environmental, international environmental facilities, but even bilateral investment flows from Switzerland, Germany, and so on. Because the biggest challenge that we have is implementing on an economy-wide scale. So at the moment, 1.1 billion, we're really doing demonstration projects, pilot projects, drawing lessons, and the question is how do you take the demonstrations, the successful ones, and implement it economy-wide across. So it's about mobilizing private sector investment flows, international investment flows, with our little bit of money. Thank you.
My apology about the 8 billion and 800 million. So I'm getting old. But the follow-up question would be, how much is spent on hiring these so-called experts and consultants? I thought by now that fund would begin to measure some goals to say there is a project which is intended to help the people in township or in the surrounding protected areas or deep in a particular village or rural area or whatever. We keep on pumping money to DBSA. Where are the projects?
Okay, Chair, maybe let's continue with the responses so that I can come back later on dealing with the Green Fund. I think weather services and
whilst we're dealing with that, can we also be assisted with the responses that are given so that we don't have to craft them if they are needed for our reports. We don't have to craft them from, you know our knowledge base.
Certainly prepare them in writing also on the responses that you provided. Weather services and then maybe the colleagues on and then the CFO and the colleagues from Oceans and Sand Parks. Quick responses.
I thank you very much, Chairperson. I think there are two questions directed at weather service. One is around the 40 million surplus. That 40 million surplus is a non-cash surplus. We have some land that we are supposed to develop and build the weather service headquarters and the training college. But with the work that has been done, like rezoning the land and all that, the land has appreciated. So it's not really a cash surplus. I think myself or Will maybe add to that. But on the impact, in terms of the operational budget, over the period, over the last few years, the operational budget of the weather service has been getting a lot of reductions. As a result, the amount of money that we receive now, it only pays for staff. So for operational work, we are using the funds that we generate commercial from aviation and also other services that we provide. But the impact will be on safety of life because we are a 24-hour service institution. we are not going to be able to provide a 24-hour service. And the other challenge is that we've got extensive infrastructure and technology that needs to be maintained to ensure quality and availability of data. And that is going to be affected as we move forward. And as you know, that is the challenges of climate change and climate variability here in South Africa. So that's one of the areas where we really have a challenge. And these are the ripple effect because we also regenerate our own income. We need to provide quality information to aviation. So it's also going to be an issue in terms of aviation safety if we are not providing the service 24/7. And we are also having our experience and competitors that are coming into the country. If our quality of service to our existing commercial customers is not maintained, they will go somewhere else. So those are some of the challenges that we are faced with. And we also have international obligations as the countries that we need to meet certain standards that are in terms of compliance when we provide weather and climate information and when we provide information to aviation. So those will affect the reputation of the country. When we talk about aviation safety, we also need to consider safety of flights in South Africa, and our economy will also be affected. Thank you.
Maybe whilst we are there, I think DG, we obviously are aware of the impact of this reduction for this financial year. So that, to cut a long story short, what are the plans to mitigate against these problems that all of us obviously would be aware of? We're talking about from a nominal decrease of 10 million for this year. 20 million in the next year.
Yeah, 20 million is coming in, another 20 million in the following year. It's 40 million in total.
So
the next 2 years.
What is it that we are doing to mitigate? Because indeed, but added to that is your capacity to get whatever revenue you are expected to get, including from all those people who are saying they run away to somewhere else. Are they able to pay for the services we are giving them? Do we have the capacity to get our revenue from whatever quarters where we are expected to? But whilst doing that, DG, what do we do? Because this is quite a serious dent in their fiscus.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think in the last 5 years, if you look, we were requested to look at commercial strategy as an organization. And we, from aviation, from the last 10 years, we've moved from generating revenue of around 44 million, generating 81 million. For the other non-regulated, we've moved from 2 million to 6 million. So in terms of predictability of the business that we're in, aviation, we've reached the plateau. We cannot really, it's more of the inflation increases and all that. We, from our side, we're trying to look at the commercial part of the business. But the issue is that we had discussions with the DG. We will be sitting down with National Treasury because the part that is not funded properly is the public goods part, which is really the area that we need to be looking at. So we will be having discussions in terms of that. But from our side as an organization, we have not stopped to look at commercial opportunities and growing a non-regulated commercial revenue, because with the airline industry, we've reached the maximum.
I think that Chair and Honourable Members, I said I would come back later after the CFO has also responded. But on this particular matter, the weather service, we know that Treasury right now is tight. The fiscus is tight and is quite constrained. We don't foresee a likelihood of getting anything out of the negotiations that we are having with them. The initial
arrangement that we had before we even thought we could, we were also going to further cut as a department. We thought we would find a way of borrowing Paul to robbing Paul and pay Peter there and so on. But we realized that it's even tighter for us. As the CFO was also explaining, that even our ratio in respect of our own operations, our budget is going down. So versus the human resources that we have. Normally ratios should be like 2-1, but now we are like far in respect of what we would be expected to get from an operational budget point of view. Secondly, also the other public entities are concerned. Initially, we were thinking that we could take part of the infrastructure budget elsewhere and then facilitate further investments, weather services, when there are other commercialization plans, like they are acquiring an equity stake in another venture. And Treasury, we were engaging with them to actually authorize that. But I think Treasury was seeing the prospects of weather services making money out of that venture and basically use that as an opportunity to begin to reduce their budget now before they can actually realize that income. So they have to manage within the budget that they have, which is what currently is a plan. And in the long run, we will still then continue with the engagement on this aspect of how we fund public goods. And they also have other initiatives on some of the automatic weather stations that they develop themselves as a weather service that they are going to be selling to even to some of the other municipalities where there is a need for them to adapt as part of the climate services. Instruments that can be sold and financed through selling them to local government. But you also are aware that local government is not quite liquid in terms of financial sustainability. So we'll keep on probably reporting back to the committee on what when we really get into a danger zone. But at this point in time, we wanted to acknowledge that we do have this pressure, but we'll manage within what is available as a matter of course, because that's what they're expected to do. And the CFO will also talk about there is a difference. The methodology of financial accounting in public entity is different from what we do in government. We are on a cash accounting system, they are on accrual systems. But the regulations of CFMA indicate that they must declare surpluses, but at times those are not surpluses, they are committed funds because nobody is supposed to plan for surpluses or plan for a deficit. So it's more an accounting issue also in terms of how they present their financials. CFO?
Okay, thank you. Okay, I'm not going to talk about surpluses. I think you've explained it well, Jesse. I'm going to start with the unitary payment. The unitary payment basically is the amount that you're supposed to pay per annum for 25 years for the new building. National Treasury contributed in total 220 million the other year, and then 149 million because 146 billion the current year. So we didn't build the new building cash. It's being financed like a bond. Yes, so the unitary payment means whatever that will be paid for the year. We are projecting that per annum will be paying 120 million. And we are going to reprioritize from what we've been paying for rental in the current building combined with what has been allocated by National Treasury to make that 120 million. And if it is a shortfall, National Treasury, the minister signed a guarantee because this building is going to be an asset of government in the future. So it is being financed by National Treasury. So the 60-60-60 is the indicated allocation that they give to us. So they look at what we're saving on rental and other services to top it up, and then from there come to the 120 million that we're supposed to pay per annum. The laboratories. The laboratories, 10 million was given as we wrote a submission to National Treasure that our laboratories for ocean coasts were not compliant to occupational health standards. So it's not like a continuous allocation. They normally call it a non-caring full cost. So they gave us that amount to lift our standards to whatever that we wanted to. And I think if we need more, we have to make submission again to National Treasure with what health standards we are not complying with. And then they'll give us more money. Also, the integrated permitting system. I think when we wrote system, National Treasury was not going to implement the system once. But in the meantime, it is continuous. During all the cuts, the National Treasury will look and say, this is a non-caring through cost. And then they cut. But then we go back with them and engage and say, in the system, there is compensation, there is operations, and there is capital. Therefore, we need more money. At times, they do give it to us, and then at times, they just say, reprioritize from the department. With the projects, that's reduction from 660-something to 530. Overall, the projects are increasing. We're just reprioritizing from other expanded public works projects. Here at the bottom, there are expanded public works, including the compensation of employees as we increase the budget. But look at the bottom line, it is generally increasing. But between the projects, the other ones are less and the other ones are more.
Let me just respond to the question raised around the Flagalas and Agoa, and my colleague Alan will respond to where we know much about our EEZ, that is exclusive economic zone. With regard to the Flagalas, the benefit is not only directed to the Department of Environmental Affairs only, but then there are quite a number of departments that benefit. For instance, Department of Science and Technologies, more about 4 or 5 to 8 universities that are benefiting, as well as public entities. For instance, the South African Weather Service, for them to provide annual warning systems of the impending weathers, they do rely to a large extent on the information that is coming from this uniquely placed, that is the Sinai and islands. So indirectly talking to economic data as well, because you can issue warnings based on the information that is coming from the sea. And also the South African National Space Agency, to an extent, do provide a space weather to Department of Defense and other communication if there are any impending events that could disrupt communication. And therefore, you're talking economy of the country and safety of the country. And when we talked about, we also conduct research in order for us to understand what's beneath the ocean surface. Obviously, we cannot manage what we do not know. So in order for us to start valuing what's underneath the ocean, we do conduct surveys as well. And universities conduct a number of research related to climate change, understanding the climate change impact and implication to South African economy as well. Thank you. Alan.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Why don't we allow them to finish this, and then we can make a follow-up. Yeah.
Thank you. I'm going to be responding to the question which Ms. Mpeka has just addressed, but also responding to the question by the Honourable Member, are our resources being taken care of? And do we know the size and scale of our marine resources? Let me at the outset indicate that marine resources are not only the responsibility of this department, but also the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries. And in areas outside marine protected areas, and when we're not dealing with protected species, it's the actual use of such resources, how are your catch rates, that actually could give a good indication of the state of those resources. I'm talking about the commercial fisheries. When we come into, and also the picture is not always very good, some of these resources are clearly under pressure. When we come into marine protected areas, some of them allow access to fishing within them, and others are completely conservation areas. Within those areas, we undertake surveys to see what is in these areas, in other words, biodiversity surveys, diving surveys, find out what's being checked there, that we also do monitoring of certain of the stocks like the lionfish in Pondoland Marine Protected Area, St. Lucia, the Whip, because often it's only in these areas that the adult fish grows sufficiently large to be able to reproduce, and this does effectively take care of the areas outside to ensure sustainable fisheries. But there's also other investigations into unlocking the value in marine protected areas. There's biodiscovery, where novel chemical compounds could be used in medicinal and other uses. This is something that is taking off. And also, when we have these marine protected areas, a lot of research is advised by the conservation management priorities to provide information. In other words, are these protected areas correctly placed? Are they correctly owned? And are they fulfilling their objectives? So we monitor to do this. Another thing is on protected marine species. These are things like seabirds, whales, sharks, dolphins. Here, we believe they are being well cared of by our departments. They're also very valuable generators of ecotourism revenue, you know, with indirect, with direct values of about $500 million and probably indirect values far greater than that. Over 1 million tourists visit or specifically visit bird colonies or do whale watching trips on an annual basis throughout the country. And this is something that is in all provinces. It needs development in the Northern Cape, but it occurs right around our coastline. And to the Sayagallis and also the Algoa, these vessels do all the research that cannot be done by a small boat which is launched on a daily basis from the coast. They have to put down the moorings, which measure the currents, which both give us short-term information and longer-term information on climate change. If there's low oxygen outbreaks, it's these vessels that do the survey to find out the causes. They also do research into new and unfolding areas. So it's not just what we know already, but there are harmful algal blooms. There's the role of marine viruses in the ocean. There's ocean acidification, which is very linked up to climate change. And as already been stated, this is whenever possible in a collaborative manner with other organizations, but it's our department that manages the primary platforms for this. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I will respond to the two questions that were asked, as being the employment of the additional rangers. In fact, what happened here is that there was a change in strategy for the security, gate security component in the Kruger National Park. We had always outsourced the service, and due to the risks with the sheep, with rhino poaching, a decision was taken to insource the service and make sure that we are completely responsible for gate security. Now that came with the additional costs in terms of the level of salaries that we pay within certain parks, and of course the effect of benefits as well. And then the issue of the medical aid, I will try and explain this very slowly because even for me it was very difficult to understand. What happened is that historically people at the perceived general worker level were never part of any medical benefits. What happened alternatively was that clinics, whether permanent or mobile, were provided in each of the sections. And last year, when these people were all brought onto the medical benefits, it is not the medical benefit itself that gave rise to the deficit, but rather the impact of the policy that everybody else that joined the organization prior to 1998 is entitled to post-retirement medical. So the provision is for the reason that they were employed prior to 1998. I hope that is clear enough. I know it is quite complex. It took me a couple of days to understand. That's why I'm saying we can talk about it even outside of this forum. We'll try and explain.
You wanted to make a follow-up?
My follow-up regarding the Agalis and Algoa vessels, where there is any other technology available that doesn't require the intense resources, especially human I hate calling people human resources, they're not resources like paper and things, but you know, the personnel component, it requires that and the maintenance of that vessel. Are there any other technologies that could be implemented or used to get the same information? I understand you went on to say that it also is used to explore new areas, etc. So I just want to know, you educate me. And with regards to the Sandparks Medical Aid, my question still hasn't been answered. How this could have been left until last year, when this issue of, you know, general workers having to use mobile clinics while other employees, you know, get to use medical aid, why that issue was not addressed 10 more years ago.
Thank you. I think honourable members, I can't say that at least the negatives that I hear this matter predates them, and it also predates my time. But but it is an issue of policy shift. I think the minister, one, we had undertaken an analysis of the personnel requirements in the environmental sector first, what we call environmental officers. Comparing ourselves with national and provinces in respect of trying to understand the issue of capacity. And we have different categories of enforcement officers, conservation or rangers, and so on. In that process, we picked up gaps. In provinces, people were not being paid appropriately. Levels of environmental officer, if now, but I would have to go check my documents, were quite low level, which is why we were not attracting people that could work for the environmental sector, especially at an appropriate level, whether you're dealing with EIA, whether you're dealing with enforcement and compliance, and also whether you're dealing with enforcement and compliance in protected areas, which is provincial nature reserve and national. The discussions between ministers and MECs through MINEC then led to an agreement, because one, it's for us to get everybody to a certain level of parity. It meant phased implementation over a number of years because of issues of affordability. So we started with certain categories in municipalities, and we also discovered things for ourselves in Sandparks in particular. And then the board was then also, because where you have public entities, even in provinces, it is not only sufficient for minister to make the commitment of the MC. Then the board must actually discuss the matter, revise policies, and so on. So this is more a historical process. So this government then made the decision that we need to then, or the, at least the minister amended, made the decision that we need to then do a redress of sorts. And Sandparks implications were then as huge as you have heard. But I don't think it's only ending on the medical aid. There is also issues of the level of employment. Because when they're not on medical aid, in the past, in protected areas, people stayed there and they had accommodation in the park,
provided everything in the park. One of the things that has emerged is that when officials or staff leave or when they pass on, they don't even have homes to be buried in. We have a problem in Tsitsikamma National Park, for instance, which we have been trying to resolve on then relocating those families and finding appropriate settlements for them and so on and so on. So we have a bigger problem which I think we can come back and discuss for in respect of protected areas, because historically there have been certain practices in respect of how they are provided for both in terms of accommodation but also in terms of their salary packages or even wage packages. So it's a big problem, and I think that reflects it. And I think currently there is a solution there, and the board is working on how it manages to avoid long-term liability. The members would still be a liability to the state if they do not have medical aid, and we would have to find a grant system to then cater for it. So the state would still have to find a mechanism to have a provision for the staff. Coming back to the other matters that were raised by honourable members, I think on the matter of DBSA honourable member, we can provide a list of projects or at least the categories, or have a more detailed presentation. The investments range from climate responses, where we are testing technologies, and how we could use those to transition to a low carbon growth in various areas. For instance, there is a project on conveyor belts that are to be manufactured in South Africa, but they also have less more efficient in terms of energy use and so on and so on. We have others that relate to recycling and looking at testing some technologies. So these are initiatives where we are beginning to understand what is the market saying. Why is there no investment from private sector in some of these areas? We are also engaging with the banks to understand why are they not financing, and then in that process of understanding what then the reason for lack of uptake, we are intervening in those areas to then facilitate the stopgap measure so that then the level of risk are also reduced in respect of investment in terms of a cleaner development. So we have a range, and what we hope to do in the from this first investment is that then there is opportunity for scaling up. So others will not do well, we'll definitely have some failures, but we anticipate that there will be success, and from those that are successful, we will then be able to scale up. And we are already looking at how we're going to do a review of that program, at least after the 3 years or 2 years of implementation. And then the next aspect of the issue around projects has been clarified on the movement of numbers, but the overall base growth in terms of project financing. On the laboratories, I think the honourable member's question about the 10 million and no continuation in the outer years is still valid. I think the fact is that for now that is the allocation that we have. Yes, for this is a response to an audit that we undertook to assess our compliance with the occupational health and safety in the laboratories. And basically the report came back saying we are not in compliance, and these are the kinds of things that may happen, and therefore we need some level of investment. This is what the submission to Treasury was. Maintenance of that compliance is still going to require some allocation. But in terms of investing in the infrastructure, I think it is the ones of investment, and we will then afterwards have to maintain it. So for now, I think we can say that honourable members, we still have to make the case for how we then continue to maintain and comply with the health and safety. But at this point in time, that is the only convincing case that we could make to Treasury. And then on the matter of the co-ocean marine resources, I think honourable members, let me say that we, as a department, we understand the size and scale of resources is there's still a big gap in understanding that. There
knowledge that we have in the from the area of commercial marine resources or commercial fisheries. Because in those areas we need to allocate, whether it's a total allowable cash or a total effort to then extract the resource from the sea. There is research and information base that we keep updating as government, even if it's done now by fisheries, but in the past that was the function that we were responsible as environmental affairs. But in the non-consumptive resources, and even if both the non-commercial fisheries which can commercial in other waters like in the East Coast, in the wild coast of the Eastern Cape, we don't have enough knowledge about the resource, how much resources we have there. But we do know that we have some of the fisheries that are commercially exploited on the west coast or even on the southern coast of the Western Cape. So there is an investment that is required by government in terms of the information and coordination. And it does link back to also that issue of the FAR balance and the other vessels. Whether it's environmental affairs or another department or navy or defense, government will have to spend money on understanding and even enforcing research for the country from the oceans, in both understanding the potential of the oceans to the economy, but also in protecting the ocean. So the investment is justified, and in fact, we feel underinvesting. Whether you're going to, the Navy themselves also buy certain types of vessels, but they are different in use. Our vessel navigates ice conditions, quite difficult terrains. To get to other African islands, there is no other vessel that can get there in terms of the fleet it is our fleet. So this fleet then, or at least this one vessel or two vessels that we manage, is actually for the use of even other departments, not just on the environmental. But the work that the minister, or at least the president, has stated based on the decision of cabinet on exploring the ocean environment, there is one focus area that is on environmental sustainability and protection, both in terms of the protection of the EEZ, which is the economic zone. We have a particular area that we are responsible for as a country. We have to patrol that area, or at least monitor it in one way or the other. There are technologies that can be deployed to supplement, but all of them are quiet. You need vessels, you need some satellites, you need helicopters. There is a helicopter that is transported by the FAR Galas when you go to Antarctic. To move goods from the vessel to the base, you need that kind of equipment or technology. So there is improvement in how all of those technologies provide the services. But all of them, I think, are required, and there is no replacement for a vessel to be able to get to those bases. Then the other matter that was raised by the Honourable Member on people with disabilities, Honourable Member, we have a target of 2%. In the last financial year, that ended 31st of March, we met the target. We continue to be challenged in respect of other branches in the department not being able to meet the target based on the nature of the work, but we have efforts in the plan of the department to try and recruit people with disabilities as far as possible and even retain them, because the other aspect is retaining them. Because in some instances, we had an example of one employee that decided to leave the employment because they get the, when they compare what they get from grant and the kind of subsidization of all of the, I mean, you have to, if the person needed a car, a driver, and a helper, and so on. So those you don't provide with employment, depending on where the person is employed in terms of the salary package.
And based on that, when they then calculate, then the person says that she was actually worse off being employed in the department. So there are a number of other challenges with different disabilities, but I think we are learning as a department in that regard. And the issue of internships and learnerships, we actually do advertise in the public media, and again also word of mouth helps, but you still have to respond to them before deadline. And once the advice is out, we advertise towards around October every year, and then we process and make people aware before the end of the year in terms of their availability or even in general availability of their positions for internships. And then the performance management, we have what we call work plans for staff below senior management level, SMS level. SMS level is an outline to the SMS handbook on us signing performance agreements, but also lower levels, up to level 4. We have our challenges in respect of the content of those work plans. To a point where we've been, as an organization, trying to standardize, for instance, for auxiliary services, what then are the key indicators that should be covered in the activities in the work plan, and how we manage the performance. We have difficulties in also saying, in most instances, when we then manage the actual performance, what then is the threshold? If you say, what demonstrates additional work, and it's difficult for certain levels of employee to demonstrate additional work. For instance, if you are cleaning, what is additional? If I clean this desk every day and it shines, what then is additional in terms of assessing whether people then are excellent in the manner in which they perform in the organization? But we are trying to improve the management of performance, but we do have a system. And we also have an electronic document, a balance scorecard system, which is automated for cascading downwards. Upwards is still difficult. Currently, my scorecard is a DG, then aligns with the DDG, and the DDG scorecard aligns with the chief director and the director. And we are now going further lower in terms of the levels of in the organization. And then the issue of internal upskilling versus use of consultants. I think one of the members, we can come back to this also at another point. In the department, we have areas where we cannot not outsource because of the nature of the work that is involved, especially in the private services areas. There are areas where we continue to reduce our use of consultants and invest them in internal capacity, which is why even our structure has changed a bit in terms of that consideration. So we continue to revisit those areas, but in terms of efficiency, even with the budget that we're producing, I still think that yes, we have other systems, which are ICT-based systems. We have an electronic document management system in the department. Our submissions are done electronically. I can approve it, I can authorize something on right now online because we have the web-based system. But there are areas where transversal systems still require us to produce paper until the government then moves to those to a more electronic system, like in terms of financials, we still have to keep all the records and keep all those files and so on. Coming to Parliament, we still have to table the structure on paper. We'll be happy to push a button and submit the set plan, and it is possible. But again, I think there's this different state of readiness in respect of how far we can go in that regard, but we are here to test those with Parliament if the committee would reach an agreement with the programming office in that. that regard. And then on the matters of misconduct and grievances, I think Dimpo can talk to that, but it does, would in time to improve in this area, but also there are legislative concerns. For instance, I take an official on a precautionary suspension. And I have to do everything within 60 days. So those are prescribed time frames. And when they exceed, because we still exceed time frames in some of the cases, it is also because of either what the chair of the disciplinary hearing, because we normally get somebody from outside, from another department or another province, to the chair, and other logistical matters. But I think this is an area which we can, I think, try and continue to improve on. Want to add?
No, I think you've covered it, because in the end, that is the challenge that we have. When you look at our own labor laws as well, because you're supposed to allow the individual also a minimum number of days to come and do a representation themselves. Mm-hmm. No, it's 15 days.
I'm doing 7. Don't worry. Continue and finish.
Okay, thank you, Tisha. So it's issues that even in the smaller case when there is a misconduct, because they get deeper. With the TDNs, it's a longer time. With the misconduct, you then get, I think it's about 10 days for misconduct that they should come. So when you then look at those and the time that you also need to respond to them, it adds, you end up at a 30-day time frame. But we are a piece of indicators where possible and where we can resolve them quicker. We are trying to do that.
It's an honorable members. I was going to give it to two members. Since we are going for 1 o'clock, can we then allow us to break now? So that when we come back, I think we have done justice to program one and the budget. Now we will get to program two plans. Program three plans. Of course, if there are some budget issues that come in, by all means. But broadly, we have dealt with the budgetary item. So can we then, if members can agree with me, I will take you first thing when we come back, honorable members, who has your head up. But of course, after I've taken you, we then get program 2, program 3, program 4, etc., etc., etc. But you do get the drift of the committee. You do get the drift of the committee. Because all that we are interested in is with the allocations that we have before us, will you be able to do your constitutional duties? Nothing less and nothing more. And if you'll be able to rob Peter and say Paul within the department, by all means. But there are some responsibilities that we cannot leave unquestioned. We'll have to question whether will we still have South Africa protected. Will we also have the various courts and seas of our country protected by yourself and whoever that you work with? But we will also do job creation. Are we negotiating with everybody in relation to the climate change, and are we able to have the capacity to negotiate all those issues? So as far as what we have done today, I think we did the best that we could under the circumstances. Let's come back at 1:30 and continue with program 2 after I've taken 2 questions. Thank you very much. I'm told the lunch should be outside, I'm told it is finger lunch. If you take too much like me, you can go to some restaurant somewhere. But 1:30, colleagues and honorable members, thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you.